like, this is not what I envisioned. This is going to be perfect. I was spent my whole life trying to make this perfect world, and now it was crumbling right in front of my eyes. And so that was the moment where I remember standing at my counter and I was like, no, I am going to just be the best me for me and for my kids. And that's all I can do. And that's my goal. That's my goal now. And so since then, it's been this life of just shedding all the shoulds and just doing, following my heart and like being really committed to my heart.
This is for the people who push the boundaries of our society, for the people who live on the fringe, for the people who aren't afraid to question the status quo and live life as exactly who they are, not as who they should be. These are the people who make us uncomfortable, who speak truth and break glass ceilings, who aren't afraid to stand up and face themselves, who refuse to be oppressed and help us expand and evolve the edges of humanity. These are the real rebels, and this podcast is for them. Hey, it's your host, Katie B, and thanks so much for tuning in to this guest episode of the Real Rebel Podcast. I have a beautiful human here for you today, and her name is Thirza Voisey, and she does something really cool, which is work with horses and does horse therapy. It's really incredible. I actually had a chance to go meet her and hang out with her and her horses and also goats and dogs and many other animals on her farm called Soul Farm Sanctuary. And it was really incredible. And the way that Thirza and I met is really cool too, because we happen to live on the same island. And as you'll hear in the episode, she and I met in a really kind of random, not so random way. I was walking in the woods and she was there and she was like, hey, Katie. Anyways, you'll hear us go into the story in the episode. And I feel like you might be on the same page with me when you hear about horse therapy. It's just something really cool and really intriguing. Hearing Thirza talk more about what exactly is going on in the horse therapy and her whole story, going from working the regular 9-to-5 and then doing this major life switch, moving to an island, to a piece of land that, you know, didn't have anything on it, and then creating this whole soul farm sanctuary where she is following her heart, following her soul, and doing the thing that felt right to her, even though there were lots of bumps and resistance and things like that along the way. She prevailed, and here she is. I was able to visit her and hang out with one of her horses, and it did some interesting things and some clearing for me, which was really cool, as you'll hear about in the episode. And what's really exciting is she actually has a book that has just come out called The Wild in Us. I've read it cover to cover. It's a really easy read, a really great book. And as always, that will be linked in the show notes of this episode at realrebelpodcast.com, along with everything else that we talk about. If you want to check her out and do a little Instagram stalking while we're talking, you can find her at Soul Farm Sanctuary, or you can also Google her website, which is soulfarm.ca. And yeah, she's just an awesome human, super down to earth. And again, the way we met is really cool. So without further ado, I am going to take us right on into this episode with the lovely Thirza Voisey. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's quite serendipitous in a way that you're here. So for people listening, Thirza, and I'll have a particular bio for you in the beginning, so they'll know all about you already. But we met on the island that I was living on. Do we say the name of the island, do you think? Should we say it?
I don't know. You're the one that's weird about it.
I know. I just love it so much. Anyway, we met on it will come up eventually, I'm sure. But we met on this island where I was staying to kind of heal my body, and you live there, and you knew that how did you know that I was on the island? I'm so curious.
I think I started to recognize because I watch you on Instagram and it was your stories and I was reading what you were putting, but I started to notice that I recognized these beaches and the islands that you were looking at. And I was like, that's the beach I go to every day.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so funny. And then you messaged me and like, I was terrible at replying to all your emails and messages because that's just the headspace I've been in. And then I was walking one day out on the trail and I was in my, this like, I don't know if I would call it stormy, but I was in like this intense, you know, as you get in the woods. And I was like walking and you were like, Katie, and I had my headphones in. I was like, did that woman just call my name?
Yeah, and you looked at me like, what? How dare you call my name and know me? You.
Yeah, yeah. And then we just got to talking and I went to your farm, Soul Farm. So for people listening, and I think that horse therapy for me is so intriguing. And I think it's so intriguing for so many people because they're so mysterious and beautiful and powerful and raw. And when you invited me to come over, my fear came up of like, well, I have nowhere to hide. Like, I'm going through stuff and the horse is going to know. And then the horse is going to tell Thirza and she's going to know.
Not exactly like that, but yeah.
So what is it? What is it exactly that you do in your own words?
So basically the horses are like a co-facilitator with me and they are so open and they're so sensitive. That they feel people as they come to the farm. And I also feel people in an intense way, which I think is partly why I'm drawn to them to work with. And in a herd scenario, horses want everybody to be, they call it entrainment. They want everybody to be kind of breathing the same. And so they'll work with your brainwaves and your heartbeat and make everything and your energy and just get you calm. And so you're matching them and so that they can then spot a predator.
Okay. I didn't know that was the purpose of it.
Yeah. So they will not, and they also, HeartMath Institute talks a lot about the energetic space around the heart of the horse and that it's a huge space. And that's why it feels so good to sit within that. But then they also, so it's layers, right? They also, once you start asking the horse to do something, they will also show you all the ways that you are maybe not confident or how you're not aligned. So one of the worst things feeling wise for a horse is when we feel a certain way, say we feel angry and we pretend that we're so happy and things are so good. Right. And they don't like it. They'll just go away.
They're like, why are you, this is a bad feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. So a safe human feels, cause they always want safety, right? They're prey animals. They're always looking for safety. So a safe human feels like confidence, they feel grounded, they feel just like their heart is open and that the horse can trust that person. Mm. And horses, my horses here included, have been through things, right? Like we have as humans. So they also have their traumas and then we have our traumas. And so we come together and it just soothes all of that, right? We look for that kind of common ground of trust. It's kind of the real basis of it.
That was such a huge word in your book that came up so often as I was reading it. And I think right now, when it comes to intuition and trust, I really want to get into that with you later. But I know the people listening are going to be like, what does it look like? What does a horse therapy session look like? I had the same questions in my mind. I was like, am I going to be on the horse? What is going to happen in this session? So what is it? I know it's different every time. It's so individual. But in general, what is that experience like?
Yeah. So nobody's on the horse unless that's kind of, we've maybe built, right? A huge relationship. You've got a relationship with the horse and then it's kind of, she's almost asking you to get on, right? Then that would be kind of the progression. But no, it's mostly ground from the ground. Often there's no ropes or anything. It's just, you come as you did and you meet the horse, you learn how to meet the horse in a really respectful way as you would meet a horse in the wild, right? As a horse would meet a horse. And so that's a really honoring space that we come from. Instead of often we can be so human in our kind of entitlement, right? Oh, you're a big fuzzy animal. I'm going to walk right up to you and pet you and you're going to like it or whatever. And
yeah, which is not always the case.
No, and they're very, and I have mares and they're, you know, can be very aloof and very like, you are going to respect me entirely. And so they demand that. And it's beautiful when you get it. So we work with that. And then often there's intuitive things that will come up. And then I will be kind of the translator of those things. Sometimes one of the energy centers will come up and be kind of just a either the horse will physically sometimes touch the person in that area, or the horse also will touch their own bodies too. So it's kind of a mirroring thing again. So to manage if your heart center was really blocked, maybe they would, you know, touch themselves down their front legs. And it's something that I used to be like, yeah, whatever, horses are just being horses, right? But I watched enough times to see, like, I would get maybe a hit about that person's heart center, and then the horse would be doing that. Or an example I had in the book was that a woman came, was really feeling emotional, told me she was feeling really emotional, and the horses will roll to ground themselves and their energy. And so they just started rolling kind of almost spastically to help this woman ground. Oof. And then she just felt so, I could just feel her just sink into the earth.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then once the horses were up kind of meditating in the sun. And so the person in client and I went up and we were in the bush, and it was actually Luna. She's our young one. She's only 4. So she was just kind of learning. And she's still learning. And so, but our gelding was standing, our male horse was standing in the bush meditating. She came up to him and the woman was standing right there, and they had kind of a triangle. They often do these formations that are very cool. Like they'll put their nose at each other's heart or wherever. And then the woman just, you could feel a bit of a shift, and she just started to cry and her heart was open, and she just had this huge, and Luna was right into it. She was right in the meditation, she was right doing all of it, and I was like, she's doing it.
That's amazing. So the horses meditate, and you wrote that a few times in your book, and I was like, so they're actually meditating, or what is that? They're just sitting there in stillness, or standing in stillness, I guess.
They are, and they're often, you'll see, especially Raven, one of our mares, she does this, like, her eyes kind of start to twitter and her ears go, and you can tell she's kind of gone.
Oh, so you think that they're in another realm? They're like out, they're totally transcended.
Yeah. I don't know where they go, but they're doing the work.
What is it about horses in particular that makes them so good to do this therapy?
So I think their sensitivity level, I mean, people have talked about horses as, you know, in mythology and as these powerful beings, right? And partly because they're so huge, that especially when you're working with them and sharing your life with them, you have to get your shit together to be respected and ask respect of a giant, right?
Yeah.
And because they're so incredibly sensitive, and in my experience, the mares even more so, right? The females more. They really demand of us that maybe a dog wouldn't, right? Dogs are like, yeah, I love you. I just love you.
You're the best.
Yeah. And then you expect it. I mean, I said about Raven for the first 3 years, I said, I don't think she likes me. I just don't think she likes me. And then when I started to learn more about really respecting her instead of just wanting my fuzzy pets and my hugs, then she gives me way more attention and way more. Yeah.
They're really in their sovereignty then, you said. Like you said, Raven, you call her a queen.
Yeah.
In the book, she's in that energy.
Yeah. And she's a real powerhouse. Like there's also these two parts of them, right? I remember saying to a friend who's kind of a teacher of the horse work that I was having a big freak because I said, I have dreams about Raven. I have, because I do a lot of my work in kind of vision journeys. And she's with me. She's always with me. She's right there. As soon as I go in, I'm riding her or walking with her or whatever. And Piper Gelding was never interested in that, even though since he's passed, he's always there now, but he wasn't. And she's always there. And so I said, you know, she's this spiritual queenly being in this work we do. And then she's here and she's flipping her butt at me and like giving me and like biting me. And what am I saying? And she's like, yeah, that's the thing, right? Is that they are these amazing beings, and then they're horses, right? They're spiritual and then they're physical, which we are too. So it's integration.
It was Raven that I met, is that right?
Yeah.
What did it mean? I feel like it meant something very like not good, but she was showing her teeth a lot near the end. And I did some Googling. It was like if they want you to back off or something like that. Or I didn't know. I was so curious what that meant.
So for Raven, that's often a sign of anxiety. So again, they will mirror. So that can be, I mean, I'm always loose in my translation because it has to be kind of in the moment, right? Of what's happening for you. But yeah. She has a lot of anxiety. She was a cart horse, and her anxiety shows up in her mouth. So that's mm-hmm. what that can be, a lot of that. But I mean, horses do all kinds of things with their mouth, right? They play with their mouth. And so it's really like, how do they do it? And also they do that. I don't know if she did that where she flips her lips up and shows her teeth.
I remember. I think she did. Yeah.
Yeah. So they do that. I mean, they're smelling a different horse or all kinds of things, but she does it a lot for kind of that settling of anxiety. It's like a self-soothing.
And the result of coming out of one of these sessions is that you are in balance, or you've been shown something that you needed to see that perhaps you hadn't been able to see. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's like a step forward on your path, your soul's right. path, right? It's being shown something. Or maybe, you know, I used to come to the horse work like, okay, I want to have a big aha. I want to come out, you know, bawling, or I want to know that I've had this thing. And it's yeah. often it just feels really nice, you know?
Mm.
And then later you have a dream, or later you have a thing where you're, oh my God, that totally, you know, opened that piece. Or, and it's continual, right? It's not, you know, people, I used to say to my husband, I said, when we make this farm, I want it to feel like when we went to an ashram in India, we went, and it just, the energy there was so beautiful. And all of India was such a different, I mean, if you've been there, right? And then we came home, and I said, I feel like people are running around like chickens with their heads cut off, right? They don't have, you know, as a collective, we don't have a spirituality that is super connected, right? Like some do individually, but not as a collective. And then the root, like connected to the earth, I just didn't feel like people generally were. And it just felt really unsettling for me. And so I want people to have kind of not that same experience. I don't want them to feel totally out of sorts, but I want them to feel that there's something, right? They come here and they're aligned, and then maybe they go back to their life and they're not. And they go, okay, well, what is that thing? At least they have a point, right? That they can revisit.
A reference point. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely felt quite grounded after, but also it's so true that they really bring out whatever it is that the truth is. Because when I got there, I was like, okay, I'm going to someone's place who listens to the podcast. Like, they might have these expectations of me. I have to be, and you know, all these things running in my head. But I'm like, I'm just a normal human. Like, I'm just, and that was probably that anxiety. And when I stepped in, it was truly like, you can only be you. You can only be where you're at. I just knew it, and I just felt it. And and once I kind of let go of that, I really just, it was, even we didn't do like a full, like a session or anything like that, but even just being in that presence, I really did feel that they just bring that very grounding kind of energy. So you are this wild woman, you know, your book is called The Wild Within Us. You working with these horses, you have, and I can attest to this because I've visited your place, you have this home that I am just like obsessed with. The design, this beautiful property with forest, and you know, you have all your animals running around, goats and everything. You didn't always live like this. And so if you could, I know this is a big question, but the journey from, or maybe give us an idea of who you were before you kind of made this transition. And then what was the thing that spurred you that you were like, I can't live in this old life anymore. I need something different.
Yeah. So I really tried to live the normal life. You know, I had a lot of anxiety when I was a kid, and I had this, well, I've had a lot of anxiety throughout my life. And I had this kind of, I talk about in the book where this powerful feeling when I was really young, like probably 5, and just the real connectedness. And it kind of took me into this meditation. I felt like I was everything. I was the whole earth and the whole universe. And then it just got too big. It just, you know, if you've ever had kind of a energetic surge in your body, it feels really big. And for a 5-year-old, it just felt like something I just didn't even know. And so I kind of wanted those feelings, just they were always right before I fell asleep. And I just kind of wanted that to stop. And it kind of felt good, but then it didn't feel so good. And so right after that, I started to be really anxious. I was scared my parents were going to die, and I had OCD, and I would try to do, like, it just turned into control, right? So anxiety with control. And that just followed into different things, eating disorder and different things throughout my life. And so I was always just trying to belong, I think was the biggest thing, and trying to be accepted. And But I knew that I wasn't just a regular, you know, like my mind was just so busy and so imaginative and also so intuitive that I knew that I could tell not everybody around me was dealing with these thoughts going on.
Yeah. You were like, I don't fit in here. Like,
yes.
There's something, why am I not picking up what everybody is putting down?
Like, yes.
I don't get it. I can relate to that feeling.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people can. And, and it wasn't just my family because, you know, there's like, I have a grandma who's quite, she used to kind of astral travel and her mom used to read tea leaves. So, you know, there's people doing the things, but I just felt like, no, I have to be really, you know, on the straight and narrow. And so I graduated, I did my, I went into social work right away and I tried to just work for the government. I did that for 11 years. Just, you can do this. This is smart. This is safe. This is the thing that we do.
Yep.
And I had to go on a sick leave and I was married at the time and I was just sick. I just couldn't. And I just hated the energy there. It was just, there was so many things wrong and with that I just couldn't sit within it. Anyway, so first I got divorced and that was the big thing for me was I just said to myself, I put in the book, my husband said, ex-husband said, I don't know if I want to be married, if I want to be married anymore. And that was the line where I was like, after the shock and things kind of wore off, because we had two little kids and I thought, this is not what I envisioned. This is going to be perfect. I was spent my whole life trying to make this perfect world. And now it was crumbling right in front of my eyes. And so that was the moment where I remember standing at my counter and I was like, no, I am going to just be the best me for me and for my kids. And that's all I can do. And that's my goal. That's my goal now. And so since then, it's been this life of just shedding all the shoulds and just doing, following my heart and like being really committed to my heart.
Well, I just got the chills when you said that. I think, I feel so many people right now. That's really it, because especially in this last year or so, that's been what's been brought to the forefront right in front of our faces, things that aren't working. And it's brave, though. It's brave to follow your heart, because the heart is there's so much unknown, and we've been taught not to trust, our intuitive, whatever you want to call them, insights or nudges. How did you begin to do that from a place that was like, I'm on the straight and narrow and totally disregarding your obvious intuitive gifts and empathicness and all of this stuff? How did you then, was it just because that moment was so potent, or did you go back and sometimes self-doubt, or like, what did that turning point look like for you? How did you really transition to trusting your heart?
Well, it took a lot for sure. I think it was really, I had always waited for something big and scary to happen to me, and it had never happened until that moment. It was happening. And I was like, I'm still alive. And now I'm still alive. And now I'm still alive. And then I promised myself, I said, okay, now you're going to do those things. What are the things? I really looked for the things that my soul, my heart really wanted to do from when I was young, right? Like I kind of went all the way back, and it was salsa dancing. Latin dancing was one of them, partner dance, since watching Dirty Dancing when I was 11. And the other thing, partly because I knew it would be good for me, was to do my yoga teacher training. So I did those two things, and then I just kind of did one thing at a time, and I started to trust. And I think I also saw that other way just wasn't working, right? The way of being terrified of everything wasn't the way. So maybe I could trust the heart's path and the soul's path instead, which I could, and I did.
And you have, and it's proven to work well for you.
Yeah.
Was there ever a moment where you... Like I think, and I keep bringing this up too, because I think self-doubt when you're on that path is so normal. And I think when people look at other people out there, it's not that no one talks about it, but you just don't see people be like, yeah, at one point I wanted to give it all up, or at one point I just didn't know if this was going to work and I was totally nuts and everyone, I was doing the thing that my family or society or people are like, what are you doing? You're this age, or you're in this place, or you money, or whatever the norm is that you're pushing up against, or maybe it's multiple norms. and you start to question, was there ever a moment like that where you were like, I just don't know. I just don't know if I can do this.
Constantly. Okay. not constantly, continually. Yeah. Right. There was a lot. So I had never been in the horse world. So as soon as I realized, and I talk in the book about that, that my daughter, she had a lot of anxiety. So it was kind of through her that I got, because I was already in the counseling field. So it was through her that I realized that the horse, because she was going through some talk therapy, and I just saw that she wasn't buying it. You know, she just was like, they give me these things to do, but she wasn't integrating it. And so I saw this space of something. And whenever there's like this door or this space, I'm like, what's happening? What's in that little space?
Yeah.
And so, cause I was taking her riding, we were going riding together, and she was like this queen all of a sudden on top of this horse doing this, like full of really aligned. She was aligned. And so I thought, well, there's this, she's fully aligned. And then we get home and she's really terrified and she's like the kind of the victim. So how can we bring these two together? So then I really looked into the horse therapy part. And, but when you get into horses, not being a horse person, people think you're insane.
I know, because horse people are like horse people. Like I have my family used to race horses, which, and have farms and all that stuff. And like, that was it.
Yeah.
Like, that was it. And especially people, that's their life. Like if you're really, so that's why you were stepping into something where there are people who might be in the same place and then have years, if not generations, of experience within this arena. And you're just like, I'm just going to waltz in here. Just give it a go.
Pretty much. Yes. And I do have this mentor, and she has helped me because she did a similar thing. And so she's like, you can do it. And I'm, well, what about, and how do I? And now my horse is this and doing this. And she just will continue to be like, it's okay. You've got this. It's okay.
And it's so important to have mentors. Yeah.
It was really huge. But, continually. And also moving to the island. So another piece is that I have two older kids, and one's turning 19, and so almost an adult. Their dad lives across the water. So we chose to move to a little island because since we split, you know, they have to go to the same school and they have to see both of us, and we share them half and half and all that. So I knew, so my middle son was going into high school, and the boat from here goes there, so it's fine. But I knew that that would not be as easy for them to come. And you give teenagers a reason to not, you know, to procrastinate, and they will.
Yeah. They'll take it. Yeah.
So I knew that would mean, part of me knew that that would mean that they'd be more at their dad's, which really tore me up inside. So even I'm still untangling the last little bits of guilt around that. And it's been, you know, 4 years.
Yeah. I think these things take time too. I think we have this idea. And even when we see people from the outside in, and it's like, oh, well, everything has been sorted out, and some things take time. It's only time that will, you know, unravel what needs to be unraveled when it needs to be. And yeah, I think you probably speak to a lot of moms out there, or just people who have guilt when you do follow the thing that is in your soul. And it's at the end of the day, it's within you. And you must do it. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's incredibly brave. How did you, in those moments where you were thinking, I got to do this thing, yet I also know it's about to come with a side serving, or not, like, if not a side serving, an entire bucket of guilt. How did you move through that?
Very sloppily. Lots of crying, lots of talking to my kids. I mean, we're incredibly open with them, and just, you know, saying, I have to do this thing. And especially my daughter was okay, because she loves the horses and the whole thing. And she also had her license pretty quickly, so she's more able to come and go. Whereas he was like, I don't like it. I hate the island. I just don't like it. And I'm like, but what about me? So it's really been, but it's been an amazing thing for both of us, because we have this bond that is not, again, not like the normal, like I was like, oh, I'm not a regular mom, you know, I'm not doing this the way I'm supposed to do it. What am I doing? I'm a bad mom, you know, and all this stuff. I just knew that something about us coming here was so important for not just me, but for the whole family. And it has proven, you know, my husband has been like, They'll see. Just let them get through their teenage time. They will see. And my son's only not even 17. And he's like, oh, okay, I see. I don't love it, but I see. And loving that we are in the place we're at, you know, that I couldn't be who I am in this way, right? I couldn't be as grounded and as just the things that I've shifted into and the places of power I've stepped into since living in a city. I just, my thing.
Yeah. Well, if you know, I feel like so often we know the calling in our heart, we know what our soul is asking, and it's eventually we'll get there, whether it's like we're being pulled and forced and bumped and pushed around. But to answer that call is just the bravest thing. And I think it opens up so many doors, to healing, to growth, to opportunities and all of those things. And it's such an important call to answer. And I think it's tough for moms. I'm not a mom, but I think I can imagine and I see and I hear people talking that it is tough and there's so much sacrifice in being a mom. And I think one of the best things that you can do is to still maintain your sense of self, because you can otherwise give too much and totally lose yourself. And then it doesn't help anybody in the end anyway. So I think, I'm just basically saying like, good on you.
Thank you. And I did. I have always just wanted somebody to say, it's okay. You know, you didn't do the wrong thing, you know, which I know in my heart, but it, like you said, like it's, there's a lot of doubt.
Yeah.
But I think I put in the book, my soul is not quiet. She's very loud. She's very bossy, just like my horses. And I hit my head a bunch of times, really hard. I had a concussion just before we left the city. And like, you know, you got to kind of start paying attention when I had a couple big car accidents. Like if things aren't working, if I'm ignoring, then, which I think it is for all of us.
It really does. I felt that this last year too. And sometimes you don't get the message yet, but you'll get a clue and you just follow those clues. Before we get into the next little bit, I really want to talk about what comes up with the horses and a few of the chakra points that you talked about in your book. Your really cool house, though, I just want to talk about it.
Okay, let's talk about it.
you spent, talk about being committed to your dream, because this is important. I'm like shaking my fist. This is important. This is important because we can have a dream and a vision in our mind and we know we want that thing, but it's not going to materialize straight away. And you found this piece of land and camped out on it for however many months while your house was being built. How long did you camp out on the land, in a tent?
Yeah, so we had an old trailer that's my uncle's that like the heat didn't work in. I think we had a fire in the heat the day we set it up. So my husband just turned it off, said, you're not using that. So my youngest son and I moved here because we had gotten a big dog and we were living at one of my parents' cabin. We weren't allowed to have the big dog there. So I was like, we're moving the farm. We got the horse. She was being boarded over here and I wanted to move her here. So we just came, and that was July. And we lived here. We moved into the house November. So I think it was July 15 to November 17.
Wow.
Yeah. And we mostly slept in the tent.
You trust fell on that one.
Yeah.
You just jumped. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's sometimes you follow the nudges. I just thought that was such a beautiful example of the nudges. And I just like the house I wanted to talk about a little bit.
Thank you.
So in your book, you go through all the chakras and how the horses rebalance. And I think for a lot of people right now, new dreams are coming up. Dreams of what could be, as old lives, as you said, you did a ton of shedding away of your old life. And you talk about the root chakra, or the first three chakras, that if they're blocked, manifesting and bringing our dreams into reality becomes very difficult, if not impossible. Why is that? And that's kind of a big question, but it just really stuck out to me as it might be something helpful to touch on.
Yeah, it is a big question. The three bottom ones are like your earthly ones, right? And so they're how you move about in the earth and on the earth. And also the energy centers and the levels of consciousness at that energy center are developed like 7 years at a time, right? So your first energy center, or your root chakra, is your age 0 to 7. That's when that the energy there and the consciousness there is being developed. So that's, as we know, like family of origin, that's where you live, that's how safe you feel, that's your physical body and your health and your blood pumping through, like all these things. And so often, pretty much always, unless we've worked on ourselves, there's still all these belief systems that sit there, right? And all mm-hmm. these ways of being. And then you move up into your second center and it's all about your emotions and your one-to-one relationships and how worthy you believe you are and all these really big, huge, heavy things. And so, and they also vibrate, you know, slower and kind of heavier down below and then lighter and quicker up top. And so this is the place where manifestation really comes into the earth. And so if we don't believe we're worthy of the thing, then it's going to have a hard time squeezing into our life, right?
Yeah.
And if we have all these belief systems, like say why money can't come or I can't have this or whatever, then it's hard too. So, and then the third one is our personal power, right? And mm-hmm. and that's the place where we get into controlling and thinking we can shove things into being and just squeeze them and, you know, struggle them into being, which is mm-hmm. where we've all been at, right? And how we have to just rise up really into the heart where we just allow and we accept and we trust and all those things. And then things start to flow more easily. So it's, again, it's not like a grinding we got to do down there. It's all a releasing, opening, and allowing.
Right. And looking at those places to help unblock whatever it might be that's keeping them blocked down there.
Yeah.
You said something really cool, and I hope that I wrote it down here. You asked the question in the book, which I really liked, where in your life have you created an illusion so that others could handle you? And you also talked about, you said something along the lines of, and I didn't write this down, but it was something to do with personal power and how we give up our personal power in exchange for belonging. And I thought that was so beautiful and so true that we all are so powerful. And perhaps, you know, this mask that we put on ourselves in this illusion that we create so that we're more acceptable to people is a part of that too, is a part of giving up our power in order to belong. What have the horses taught you about stepping into your power and about allowing yourself to just be your full big self? Is there any lesson that's come up with that around them?
Yeah. So I have always felt really big, right? I've felt extremely to this and to that and too much singing and too much noise and too much talking and all the things. And as again, most of us have. And so I try to hide that. I'm actually right now taking voice lessons to help that coming back to being seen thing. Ooh, which
that is a special nightmare of mine.
It is mine too. I do this squirming the whole time, like, no, don't make me. Yeah. But it's perfect. And the horses are big, right? They just, even just now, I was told you I was riding with a friend, and we took one of her friends, her horse friends, away, and she was running and bucking and farting and doing all the things. And I was like, whoa, look at your bigness, you know?
Right.
And they have no apology for this. And mm-hmm. I watch Raven and Luna run around here, and it's like, wow. And so that really gave me that permission to just be bigger. And I go out with them. They are the ones that I sing to, right? Especially in the dark, like I really kind of have been able to break more through that by singing to them and just really they just see you can't pretend.
No.
You can try, but they just see right through all of it. And so you're like, well, I could try, but you're just seeing right through it anyway. So.
Wasted effort.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do they like it when you sing to them?
I think Luna does. Raven's like, whatever.
Raven's the queen. She's like,
yeah. She's like, you can do that or you could go somewhere else. It doesn't matter.
Okay, there was, and these are just some points that when I'm they're so random and all over the place, but I really wanted to touch on them because they just spoke to me so much when I was reading. You talked about something that I've not heard before, and it's because it's from you. You made it yourself. The vibrational bounce, mm-hmm. where you said it's the anxiety from not being who we are. Could you explain more what vibrational bounce is? I really liked that wording.
Yeah, that's funny to hear myself quoted because I just say these things that I don't know how to, you know, you just feel them in such a huge way. And that's really, yeah, like I feel, I guess it's anxiety partly, right? Of just mm-hmm. not being subtle and not being, not feeling safe, not feeling like it's okay for me to be here in this moment, right? Doing this thing. But it is, it's like that grading of almost two things, I think is part of it. Like there's mm-hmm. that, I think it's the feeling of who I want to portray that I am and who I am and having those two integrate, which is the work, right?
Right, right. Yeah. And there's that, you mentioned a few times too about the being out of integrity with yourself and who you know yourself to be in the world, and you're not that. And it can be really anxiety inducing. I know personally, after this last year, so much shifted. And I think a lot of people I've heard too is you enter this place of suspension when you're in between, you know, who you used to be or whatever, and you're no longer in alignment with who you really are. And you're trying to figure out that. I think that can be really anxiety inducing because you are, it is like that vibrational bounce. It's like you're bumping up against things and where am I supposed to be? And I loved the wording of that.
Yeah. Thank you. I think it's funny because I'm like, what do I even mean? Like, it's such a feeling, you know, it's hard to put it into words because it is such a feeling. But
yeah. And you're sensitive and intuitive. So that makes sense. It's the last question I have around kind of the horses and their work. Oh, before I do, I feel I wanted to ask this way at the beginning and I didn't. Can you share with us who your horses are and their names and their personalities? Because you spoke about them a few times and I just thought that they should have more of a proper.
Yes, thank you. They should. Yeah. They do. Yes. So Raven is my first horse, Love. And I got her, actually just happened that I got her on my birthday when I turned 41, I got her. And so we've been together. It was just one of those things, just one of those feelings. When I saw her, I was like, oh, we got some stuff together.
Yeah.
And it was perfect. So she's come and she's 14 now. So she's probably the leader. She's probably always been the leader, but leaders in horse herds are not always so obvious, right? There's often a dominant. And so Piper came a couple years later. We got Raven the goats because we thought she'd be happy with goats, you know, because I had one horse now and that was enough for my husband and for me to swallow. But I knew that she couldn't be alone. And so, and the goats were not appeasing her. I mean, they're friends. She still shares her hay with them, but it was not enough. And so we got Piper and he kind of looked like he's the leader because he throws his weight around. Like, he's the most gentle guy ever, but he, when it comes to food, he thinks he should be first and there. And he's just a little bit more dominant, and you saw him herding her around, right? And she doesn't care. She loves it. Raven's one of these horses. She just loves her guys, right? Even my husband, she probably likes him more than me. She just loves. And then she headbutts with the women, right? Like, she has to show us. I think she just accepts. And then with us, she's like, no, I'll show you who you need to be. Watch this.
She's teaching.
Yeah.
Cool classes in session.
Exactly.
This is how you be a queen. Watch me.
You obviously don't know. Let's go. Yeah. And so Piper was here for 2 years, almost like 2 years and a month, I guess. And then he just passed at New Year's Eve this year. And he's such a love and very missed, very missed by our 9-year-old boy. He talks about him almost every night that he misses. Aww. Him. Yeah, less now. But. And then Luna came in July and she is a little spitfire. So I've given each of the horses an element, and a lot of the work we do is with the wheel. And so those three have an element and a direction. And then I have one, and it's amazing how, like, she's fire, Raven's water, Piper's earth. And I'm air. Yeah. So they really play their parts well. And so this little fiery spitfire, yeah, she's young. She's already had a baby. We got her from auction. And so she, since the day she came, she jumped a fence as soon as she arrived. We were going to quarantine her and do all these fancy things, and she just jumped the fence. I was like, screw that. We're going to be together.
She's blazed right on through.
Yeah. So she's taught me a lot and continues to teach me a lot about leadership and about how, now that Piper's passed, how they're really asking me to step into my leadership, right? Because no longer can Raven kind of hide behind a dominant gelding. She's looking to me to be like
the boss.
Yeah. Get this. Yeah. Right.
And that's so probably so important for you on your evolution and expansion for your next step in your life. And
yeah,
that's so cool. It's so cool. I just had to give them their, you know,
thank you.
Have to know who we're talking to.
Yeah.
One more thing, and then we'll go into our final closing questions. I just thought this was really interesting that you said the horses work in the realm of the divine feminine. What does that look like? And why do you believe that they work in the realm of the divine feminine?
So I have so much to say about that, but I will keep it a bit shorter.
There's no rush.
So I think we're really all being called, as we all know, the world is shifting and we're having to change, and we're all really being called to the feminine and less in the masculine. Of course, we need both of those to balance, and the masculine has just been out of balance, right? And so going into the feminine is that place of everything really that we've done moving to this farm, right? Coming to a quieter place, having our feet in the earth, really working with our creativity and realizing that that's okay. Like even writing the book for me was like, how can I be spending all this time doing something like writing? You know, that's, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us are tied up in that, right? We have to be producing. We have to be, you know, to hours for money, the whole thing that keeps us all stuck. And so I think over the next while that we're all really going to have to dive deep into that more feminine way of living, and which is really just a full circle for every humanity. And the horses bring that. So they're already there, right? They know about going with the flow. They know about living in the moment. They know about being in connection with nature. They know all these things. They know about being connected to who they really are. And they just carry that with them like this big old message, right? Mm-hmm. And when we don't get it, you know, I had a lady here once, she got stepped on, which is the only time that's ever happened. But she said, I expected her to be, you know, mad or whatever. And she said, I wasn't in my body. I was off in some thought about groceries or something, right? Or her kids or something. And she knew instantly she should not be standing by a 1,000-pound horse interacting, thinking about something else, because that's dangerous for a horse, right? For another horse in the herd to be disassociated, which many of us do, if not all of us at times, that's dangerous for the herd, because a predator will come and take a horse that's not in his body, right? And so...
Yeah. And you touched on the word disassociation. I feel so many of us are disassociated as well. And I didn't even know really what that word meant until recently, as I didn't even dive into it until recently. What, for people listening, is disassociation? And why is it so common?
Yeah. So I am not a psychologist or anything like that. So I'll say it from my perspective.
Yeah.
And my experience physically is that we just go out of our body into our anxiety, right? Yeah. That's how I experience it. And that then it starts to run, right? And it runs these patterns that we've always had, or that we, you know, that like you'll have different patterns than I'll have, or ruts. And we're not breathing properly. We're in fight or flight. We're just tense. We're rigid. We're all those things. And yeah, I lived there for a long time. And it's awful. Anybody who knows it, it feels really awful. It feels really scary and stuck. And so the horses teach the opposite of that, which is to come back into your body. And so does yoga, and so does breath work, and all of these amazing, powerful ways of being. But the horses teach it, which is why I love it. Because like I say, I've been kind of, you know, stubborn, not stubborn, but, you know, like all of us, we've said, oh, I don't need to necessarily follow my soul right now. But they say, no, we're doing this thing and we're doing it now and it's for you. Right. And so you're like, okay, well, I came and I asked for it. Right. And that's often the biggest thing, is getting people to, not that I try to get people to come, because I don't, but people getting themselves to come to the farm and be like, I'm ready for this terrifying thing that is looking inside.
Yeah, because you know, it's daunting because you know. Before I was like, before I came, I was like, I know the horse is going to see what's up. Like, I can't, like, I am I ready for this?
Yeah, that's the piece.
It's so true. Yeah. So going into the closing questions, and you can answer these in any kind of speed at which you desire. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready. I'm ready.
I always like to ask, what is the biggest lesson you've learned in the last year?
Year
or so.
That it's important. My creative work and everybody's creative work is so important for the vibration of the planet.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is like a huge, yeah. What was it that brought you to that learning?
I was actually in a group and we were doing some meditation around everybody's, it's like an intentional group. And somebody was talking about their piano playing. And I just had this vision of that person. They were kind of procrastinating about it, whatever, we'd put it on the side. And I just had this vision of this person playing piano and how that was, it was like the ripples, right? You throw a rock in the pond and it just,
yeah.
And it was just that around the whole world. And it was so important. And that was the message for her. And I was like, well, for her and then for me too. And so, and it actually happened with my book where I would be like, oh my God, do people really want to listen to me ramble on about my life? Nah, 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 nah. And then as soon as I just shut up and write the book and put it out there, people were, they were like, oh, I saw myself in this and I was able to see, you know, how I do this. And it just, I could see how very important it was for me to just say what I had to say.
Ah, oh, that's so cool. I think we have that conversation often in our minds of like, nobody wants to hear what I have to say or who am I? It's that imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, your creative work is important and there are people who need it.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's Lee Harris. He says, you are needed and now is your time. And I really resonate with that. So that's really cool. What is currently challenging you?
My mares. So I have this vision of being this like horse. I don't call my horse self a horse whisperer because I'm a horse listener, right? Like I need to see, but I also, I see myself this confident, like I just ask them, they come, they love me. They want me to be on their back. They come. Like I have this whole vision and that's my biggest challenge is like getting from where I am to that vision, which I know is already in me. I just have to shed away the parts that think I'm not that.
Yeah. And that's the journey. That's the work. And it's actual work, I feel. But I see that happening for you. In my mind, you're in like a beautiful dress also and your hair is like blowing in the wind.
Perfect. I love it.
What are you excited about looking ahead, looking into the next year, 2 years, 5 years, whatever it is? What kind of lights a fire within you?
I think just sharing my voice more because I've always, you know, I've been walking in the woods when I was little writing stories and to finally have one book out, it feels kind of like a flood has just opened and I'm like, oh, I can write about this. Oh, this is, oh, I need to, because I've always just, you know, had these things. I was just telling my friend, I have these things running through my head and I just get so tired of listening to my own stories in my head.
Yeah. Got to get this out on paper.
Yeah. And it feels, it's really fun. Right. So learning to do that with fun instead of anxiety.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I see many more books for you. I breezed through it. Like I was saying before we started recording, I was just like, I don't do that with books. I just don't.
That's a huge compliment.
Speaking of books, I always ask these three questions. What is a book or books that you either would recommend or that have been helpful for you? And it could be one that just popped up and you're really excited about, or one that it's like an old go-to and you're always reading it or going back to it. It can be a few, it can be one.
Okay. I'm a real book hound, so I have lots. But it's funny because my friend phoned me just as I was going through divorce and she said, I'm just watching you on Oprah. And I was like, well, I'm not on Oprah. I'm at home. And it was, she said, no, I know, but it's totally your story. And it was Elizabeth Gilbert with Eat, Pray, Love had just come out.
You remind me of her.
Thank you. I will take that. Yeah. But yeah, it was that same thing. Like, what are you going to do when life gives you this? Right. And I had already started on that journey and started salsa dancing, which is a big part of why she was saying that. It was like that freedom on the other side thing. So that's one. And the other one, the ones that I keep close are all my horse books. So Linda Kohanov writes The Tao of Equus and Riding Between the Worlds. And those are big for me, for seeing, just really learning more about what the horses are up to, and also integrating my own intuition with, you know, being like, oh, yeah, okay, that does make sense because there's somebody else that thinks kind of this way.
Right, yeah. And you can trust more your intuition as well. I think that's when you see someone else talk about it as well, it's kind of affirming that, oh, yeah, it's not just me. And like, we didn't talk about it. I said we were going to talk about, but trusting your intuition. Essentially, that's what you've done.
Totally.
The final two questions, my favorite two questions. If you were sitting across the table from your 20-year-old self and you could tell her one thing, what would you say?
I think just have a lot of fun. Just have a lot of fun and keep that your focus. And yeah, and also make sure, this is what I say to my kids, is make sure that when you're with somebody that they, that you feel energized by their love for you and that you feel like a better person with that. And you don't feel squashed and you don't feel stuffed into a box. That was always my thing, was breaking out of boxes, right? We don't want to be anything, your relationship, your career, nothing. You want to just be doing it your way, which is your way.
Yeah. Or you're the wild within you.
Exactly. Book plug.
Final question. What is your rebel cause? Meaning, why is it you do what you do? And why do you believe you're here?
Yeah, I just love to show people their own personal power and help them. I just like to shine that for them when somebody comes. It's like, I know the horses see who we really are, our soul self. And that's how we help people heal, is just by seeing that, who they are, and shining that for them, reflecting that for them, mirroring it for them. And that's it.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I love it. This was excellent. Thank you so much for coming on. It was really a pleasure to have you. And
thank you for having me.
And there's, as we speak, there's a view of a horse just walking past the window back there.
Of course.
Two of them.
Good timing, girls. Good job.
Yeah. Hey, it's me. Thanks for tuning into this episode. I hope that you enjoyed it and found it helpful. As I mentioned in the intro, the link to Thirza's book, The Wild in Us, and all of the other things we talked about can be found in the show notes at realrebelpodcast.com. And you can find her at Soul Farm Sanctuary on Instagram, or check out her website at soulfarm.ca. And if you like this episode and found some benefit from it, it would mean the absolute world to me if you would head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave a written review and a rating. It just helps me to grow this thing and bring it into more of our rebels' ears. Music for the intro and outro of this episode is called Deep Blue by Dusty Marshall, which you can find linked to in the show notes at realrebelpodcast.com. Okay, until next time.